All right, welcome to episode 79 of the Bobbycast. And with Forrest Whitehead. Hey, let me ask you a question. Because I was, and by the way, you're like 12, which is fun. How old are you really?
27.
All
26,
right.
I'll be
you're
27.
Good. We'll be 27 when? Soon?
November, yeah.
I'd date you. I mean, if you're a girl. Like, I wonder if you're that age. Like, yeah, it's still good for me. Let me, my girlfriend's 28. Lindsay's 28, right?
Yeah.
We think?
You turned 28. Yeah.
We hope. Yeah. So, Forrest Whitehead's here, and you are, you're 28, you're a young guy, and you've, and we'll kind of really quick roll through what you've done and then come back around to it. But you've written, list off of the songs that people would know that you've written.
Most familiar with Kelsey Ballerini, Love Me Like You Mean It, Peter Pan, Yeah Boy, Unapologetically, Legends.
Okay, so all those, man, you're doing pretty good for 27-year-old. Dang. So let's see. What I want to talk about first is I was at the ACM Honors show. I presented one of the awards at ACM Honors, and you were there. Were you there?
Yeah.
You're playing, right?
Yeah.
I saw. Okay, so it was you and Hillary.
Yeah.
You were looking at me like that wasn't me. I was like, oh boy, I got the wrong dude. This is the reason that I was like, hey, we should reach out to him, because what happened was I was presenting probably a couple awards after Kelsey played, but you were playing acoustic. Kelsey was singing, and Hillary Lindsay was singing background vocals.
Yeah.
And it was a three piece, and you guys did Legends on stage. And so I'm watching you, and I don't know you, right? I only know of you because we used to work at the same place. But I knew of you, and I was like, man, all the pressure's on Forrest here, because he's the only guy with the guitar. They're playing this raw and stripped down, like he can't suck, right?
Yeah.
Like you're on national. This is being taped for CBS. You can't suck.
It gets real.
Is that more of a pressure filled situation when it's just you're the only instrument and there are millions of people?
Man, I love that. I would love playing a more acoustic style show than more of an overproduced show.
Because all was on you.
Well, you know, I just love hearing an acoustic guitar fill a room like that rather than kind of be in the mix. So I can play a different way and almost more confident in a way in that situation. Because I'm trying to fill so much space, you know?
I thought that the acoustic version of that song was awesome.
Awesome.
Like, I like it for the radio, but it's produced for the radio. It's produced big, right? And for it to sound big and for it to be full and production.
Right.
I loved it stripped down.
Man.
And it wouldn't work on the radio. Like, everybody, it would work. I think it would work anyway. But people that don't think like me would go, well, this isn't big enough. We can't play it. Actually, I think it sounded better. Like, dude, I loved
that
song.
Well, maybe we need to cut a version like that.
I loved that song cut stripped down like that. And I was with my manager, and we were sitting there, we were watching, because we were, like, right there next to the stage. And I was like, man, Legend sounded probably better acoustic with just you two. And Hillary Lindsay sings like crazy, too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we
were legends, loving you, baby. So you wrote this, and you produced this, too?
I co-produced it, yeah.
No offense to your producing, because I think the producing's good too. But
no, absolutely.
But,
hey, you know, there's so many different ways you can take a song like that. So I love doing the contrast at acoustic situation. It always brings a different light to it.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. It's crazy. It's crazy that you were with Kelsey on that first album, because, well, we'll just start with "Love Me Like You Mean It." This song to me, even in my life of being here in Nashville, is a big song for me, because it was like the first song that I just stood out on and for weeks fought for. It was like the first time that I was a real jackass about music.
I love it.
And I mean, now everything comes full circle again, and here you and I have never met.
Yeah.
You wrote, produced the song?
I did.
We'd never met.
Yeah.
And for that song for me was a big deal, because I actually got to prove to people, hey, relax. Like, I kind of can hear some good things sometimes.
Yeah, man.
So that was a big thing for me. It was a huge thing for Kelsey. It was a big thing for you, obviously.
It's huge. Yeah.
And so was this your first number one?
It was.
Have you been paid fully for this song at this point?
I guess. I mean, I don't know. I'm still, hopefully it'll keep trickling in.
but it just trickles at this point, right?
I think so, yeah.
All right, so tell me about this. So you meet this girl named Kelsey where?
So I met Kelsey as she came into Black River. My publisher at the time, Robert Carlton, had set her up to come cut some vocals in a studio, an overdub studio. And she was just doing a couple of songs that I think she wrote by herself. was tracking the vocal, and you know, I think one of our the first times that I met her, she's like, "Hey, come check this song out." You know, just pure excitement, pure the same person you meet today, but just so on fire with what she was doing. And you know, we went in one of those side writer rooms, and she played this song. I couldn't even tell you what it was at the time. It just blew me away, you know. And I remember walking out of that room into my publisher's office, like, "What's going on with her? Is she? How are y'all thinking about signing her? What, you know, what's the deal? You know?" And just immediately had that excitement of, "There's definitely something here," you know. So it didn't take long for her to get signed, and we were in a room together. Not long after that, and just writing.
But I mean, how do you get to be? Because I remember Kelsey getting signed at the Christmas party at their party, because she was. I had a publishing deal, which means she was paid to write.
Sure.
And then they gave her an artist deal, which means they're going to invest money in her. And here you are, another snot-nosed kid, that they're going to pay money to produce.
Okay, yeah, interesting story. So as we were writing, from the very beginning, I was just doing demos of not necessarily thinking, "Oh, we're making a record on this girl." I was trying my best to make these songs that I was writing with her sound the best they could be, you know? So I was spending
pitches out to other people.
Totally. I mean, just for anybody to get interested in whatever this is, you know, because at those stages, you don't know what it is. You're just creating. And so a lot of the demos that we made turned into the master record. So it was, I owe everything for her kind of going to bat for me with the label. I'm sure they had other ideas of producers and things that they thought would be a better fit. And she's the one that went to bat for me and was like, "No, I want him to do it. He's been doing the demos. I like the sound that we're creating. We have a vibe writing. It feels right to do it this way." And so her kind of being confident enough to say that she wanted to do it that way enabled me the opportunity.
And that's cute and all, but she doesn't have any power. Unless you were doing a really good job. She's a brand new artist with no hits. She has no leverage. She has no power. They're just going, "Okay, our new artist is telling us what to do." Unless you're producing those demos, as the kids would say, fire.
Right.
They're not looking at it a second way. Right. So when you're producing these demos, are you producing them a little bit as a resume? Like, "Look what I can do." To anybody who hears it, even people that are plugging songs, are you doing? Is that in your mind?
Well, you know, it's I'm inspired differently with every artist that I work with, so that it takes the demo in a different land. When I was with Kelsey early on, I was inspired to put more pop elements. It's not like I was doing that to all my demos. So really, in a way, she kind of helped me find the sound too. It's not like that's what I did and I just messed it with her. That's what inspired in the room, the things that she got excited about, the things that we would write just lended towards a more pop vibe. And I kind of started exploring that and involving my co-producer, Jason Massey, who brings a ton as far as the pop side of things into that. And I feel like where me and him kind of meet in the middle was the sweet spot for that sound that you hear and that sound that, and it was really, I would say probably, of course, Love Me Like You Mean It was the initial sound that kind of thrown the wake for everything else on that record that kind of fell behind that. But Peter Pan was the track, even on the demo, that I remember she just freaked out about. And I was like, "There's something special about this combination of you know, sonic landscape that we're given on her record that's getting exciting, you know?" So, I mean, we just kind of found a certain lane and wore it out, tried to write every song and a part of that record in that similar lane of Love Me Like You Mean It and Peter Pan to give it an identity, really.
It also shows that everything's important. Here you are giving an identity early. But again, even Kelsey said people were shopping Love Me Like You Mean It to other people.
Yeah, a lot of people passed on that song.
And a lot of people were like, "Nah, that's not for me." And you know what? It probably wasn't for a lot of people.
You're right.
And a lot of people couldn't have made it work. And Kelsey created her own different type of lane that I don't think other people would have been able to do because of her voice, her age, she's a female. So a lot of perfect things came together at the right time. But it's a testament that you put so much work into something that you didn't even really know was going to be something.
Right.
And there's a lot to be said about that, too. I play ball, and it's like, hey, practice perfect makes you perfect.
Sure.
So here you are working on a demo, making a perfect demo, for lack of a better term, that's so good they're like, "Okay, we think this is good enough for you to do it." Anyway, my whole point is you didn't have to probably have to produce it like you did, and you did.
Well, like I said, whenever you're inspired by something, it's not work at all at that point whenever – you know, you lose hours on the clock very quickly when you find you land on a song that you're excited about.
You didn't even know though. You were just producing a demo. You weren't producing for money at that point.
No, well, that's the thing. I've never done any of this necessarily for money at first, in the sense of where, you know, if you're looking for a pub deal and you don't have much going on, you're not getting paid a lot of money. So it definitely was not about that. It was more about discovering something that we felt like was different, and we felt that there was a different quality to the lane that we were entertaining than what was going on at country radio at the time. And I felt like that was more exciting to us than worrying about, you know, trying to get paid for the demo. It was just like, dude, this is cool. I feel like this is different. Let's just roll with it. And you know, thank God, like I said, she kind of went to bat for me when it came to the label, and that really enabled the opportunity.
What's your deal musically? You play a bunch of instruments or what?
I grew up playing drums. I, learned guitar and piano self-taught. I took a little bit of drum lessons early on. I think that helped me rhythmically for a lot of things. But
what do you mean self-taught?
Self-taught meaning listening to Brad Paisley records, trying to figure out what the hell he was doing, replaying it over and over and over till I could get those licks like he played them. And I still can't do it like he played them. But it was really more of a listening to the radio than necessarily having a teacher sit down and say, hey, do this. So self-taught was just, I learned the things that I loved. I listened to popular music in a sense where it didn't matter if it was rap, reggae, whatever. I wanted to know what was making a popular song.
Can you read music?
I can't. I can do the Nashville number system.
You can or can't?
Can't. So, okay. Cannot.
And a lot of people who are self-taught can't read music. No. Like, I don't think Paul Schaefer can read music, and he is he's a genius.
Yeah.
I mean, he just, back in the, I mean, before I was born, before we both were born, he was, you know, leading the SNL band and
sure.
Did Letterman forever. There are some of these guys that are self-taught, and they never learn to read music, because that's like, why do I've learned this system my way, but it's, have you ever thought that it would help you if you learned to read music?
You know, I know that it might help me in a situation if I were trying to map an arrangement out for another person to play, but I can honestly find people to do that
for
me.
So you can translate and just go, hey, I need this, and they can write it out.
Yeah. I feel like most people that are traditionally taught, they can't sit down, or maybe some of them can, but the people that I've been around, most of them, if they're traditionally read sheet music, they can't sit down and improvise to a song. And I've always come at any instrument that I've sat down with from the base of how does it serve the song. So if I'm anything that I play, I'm always thinking that lane of thought, like how can I make this sound like a song, rather than learning a piece that's already arranged. I don't know, that just came to me early on, so I never really worried about learning properly how to play things. I probably don't even, you know, put my fingers on the right places on the keyboard, but it just sounds good to me, you know?
It's like news anchor versus, we'll say, radio personality. News anchor can't talk normal. They have to read from a prompter, but they're fantastic at it.
Yeah.
Me, I don't like reading from a prompter, but I can talk and talk like a human and actually communicate better than they can.
Right.
Unless it needed to be prompt. It's just two different styles.
Yeah.
And neither one of us can do the other. I'm going to do a commercial here real quick.
Yeah.
I'm talking about sleep number real quick. I have a sleep number bed. And so my sleep number setting is 30. Going to the store at sleep number. And there's a screen over the top of you. And, well, I guess it depends what store. The one I go to, there's a screen over the top of you. And it shows your back and your neck. And they say, okay, look, here's your back, your neck, and here's why you're maybe not sleeping right. And they give you a sleep number. The sleep number bed lets you choose the comfort, the support that's right for you. It adjusts on each side, even if it's the perfect bed for couples. Now, there's the 360. It's the sleep number 360. It is so smart. It actually senses your moves and adjusts to you while you're sleeping, so you can stay comfortably through the night sleeping. So it also warms you. The bed pre-warms as well. The sleep number 360 can pre-warm each side of the bed. And so you get in, you're all warm and ready to go, especially in the winter. Man, if you live in like one of the upstates and it's cold, man. My sleep number setting is 30. And right now, big sale, the Queen C2 mattress, $699 in Sunday. You go to sleepnumber.com and find a store near you, sleepnumber.com. And there are like 500 stores, and you can only get it at those stores right there. See, like, that's me. I'm doing a commercial. I'm kind of just talking. give me a news anchor that can do that. They can't do that. Have you seen that Instagram account? I think it's called Music City Memes.
Yes, love it.
Dude, it's so funny, yeah, right?
Yeah, like, it kills me.
I was laughing out loud at them, and it's such an inside thing, but I think I'm going to pull it up because it's the last account that I followed. And so what it is a lot of things from, I think it's a songwriter who's doing it, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they've actually said, I read an article who it is. It's called Music City Memes. And, for example, when your friend introduces you as a great songwriter and you don't know how to take compliments, and it shows a picture of awkward Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
And they're so inside. Here's one. When you are Taylor Swift and you have to listen to songwriters who have never had a hit tweet about how bad your new single is.
Right.
And it's her holding all the Grammys.
Yeah.
It's funny, the songwriter, and again, even doing this, I've got to meet and hang out and befriend some good songwriters in town. But it's very competitive. It's sure. Almost like high school.
Yeah.
Cliques.
Yeah.
Like people liking each other in their face and not behind their... But I guess that's any industry, any entertainment industry, huh? Like, how did you end up down here?
Man, I moved to Nashville from Louisiana when I was 18. I graduated high school, and I just had to be around music.
What part of Louisiana?
Shreveport. That's
dude, I lost so much money in the boats.
Oh, really?
We used to drive to Shreveport. I was in college. As soon as I turned 21, I went to college in Arkansas, Southern Arkansas, every weekend.
So, which one?
Henderson State.
Okay.
So we drove to the boats all the time.
Yeah, I bet, man.
And that was home, huh?
Yeah, it was, and you know, only till for only long enough for me to kind of get my footing and raise enough money where I could buy a travel trailer and pull it to Nashville, because that's what happened in 2009, and you know, I never looked back, really.
So you move here in 2009, and what happens?
I parked my travel trailer at the KOA off Music Valley Drive.
So you were living in it. You were renting a spot and living in a camper,
Can
basically.
You believe it was $800 a month? I'm like, dude, that's like legit. That could be like an apartment. Especially 5 years ago, that definitely could have been an apartment. I didn't know. For some reason, I thought, well, if I have a travel trailer, I could move it anywhere I wanted whenever I figure out what the landscape is in Nashville.
Define travel trailer, because I know a camper.
Yeah.
I'm from Arkansas.
Yeah, yeah, okay. It's the same thing as a camper. So, I mean, just same thing you would, you know, about 20, 21 feet to hook it behind the truck, you know?
So you were living... And basically camper.
Yeah.
You bought it, you rented a spot.
Yeah.
And you lived in the camper.
Sure.
At age 19.
Yeah.
For how long?
So, if you remember the flood in 2010, right up 2 weeks before that flood, I sold that camper. And the crazy thing about that is everything at the Opry and that Music Valley Drive was submerged. So, had I not sold that right before that, man, I would have lost everything. So it was just one of those crazy times. But I met a friend. I guess I was about 6 months in town where I met a friend at a pawn shop that I got a job at to kind of make ends meet. And he had a roommate that was moving out, and he offered me a room. So I was so ready by that time, just 6 months in to Nashville and experiencing the trailer, I was so ready just to have some space and, you know, just have a legit place to sleep at night. So
you moved up here and lived in a camper for 6 months, huh?
Yeah, man.
You ever hear about the Parmalee guys and their story?
I'm familiar with them. I don't know their story, though.
So they moved up here, all of them together, and they were living in a camper.
Really?
And they would drive it around to shows, too. But they lived... Yeah, they just had a camper. And
where'd they have it?
Off of Music Row, I believe, little bit. I don't know how much their spot was. That's interesting. That was $800.
Ain't that crazy?
That is crazy. Was...
So, I always say that because I moved up here with a roommate, and he hung out for about, I would say, 6-7 weeks, and then...
In the camper? You had a roommate?
Yeah. So, he moved from Louisiana with me, and
you were living with someone in the camper for 3 months?
Hey, dude, he was trying to help me pay rent, man. I couldn't pay the rent by myself, you know?
Wow.
So... When he left, the dude that ended up renting me a room, his name's Ryan Griffin, but early on, he helped me pull that camper when my roommate left out to Lebanon. So I pulled it 30 minutes outside of town, and so I'd make the 30-minute drive to Nashville every day, but I had a $300, $400 rent out there, so that was better.
So when you're living, I'm going to go back to the camper.
Yeah, man.
Because I live in a camper. I never had a bedroom growing up. We had like five people in a 900-square-foot house.
Wow.
And so I never had a bedroom. And then finally I was like, I'm going to go live in the camper because I was like, this sucks. I just slept on the couch and my closet was underneath the couch. And I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. We had a camper and I'm just moved into it. But there was no air and it was Arkansas heat. It was summer and it was miserable. But I had to go like inside to take a shower.
Oh yeah.
I had to like this is when phones had like cords. So I had to like pull the phone cord through the window to actually have a phone. How are you taking showers?
Okay, so that's an interesting question because that was one of those winters that there was a ton of snow and a ton of ice. So your pipes would freeze and you wouldn't have running water sometimes. And so my dad was like, well, if you leave it dripping a little bit, then maybe it'll you know, not freeze up. So I did that one day and I come home to about like 3 or 4 inches of water covering my whole camper of where it froze, even though it was dripping, but it kept filling the tank, came through the bathtub and just flooded the whole thing. That was the day my roommate left. When he came home to that, he was like, I can't do this, man.
Yeah, the ice.
Yeah,
the
dude.
Ice flood inside
so,
of your place.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, since it was just frozen, all that, man, it was a mess, really. So, you were asking about where did I take a shower. There was a bathhouse, you know, in the community that we had there at KOA that I used every day. You know, I'd walk to the bathhouse in the snow or whatever. But you don't think of it at that time. You're just happy to be in Nashville, you know. You're not thinking, man, this sucks. You're just like,
no,
Nashville.
I would still think it sucked. But I'd still be like, this is Nashville. I'd be like, man, this sucks. I can't wait to make it.
I don't know. When I look back on it, I don't really remember dreading that much part of it. There's more of just the excitement of like being in a new place, which if you understand like the kind of place I'm from, like Nashville just seems like culture shock. Just like all the interstates, all the exits, all the energy. It's just a completely different place. So I was more excited at the thought of just being there than the situation I had to be in to
be
there.
Don't you think Nashville, interstates, lights, showers? I would think all that kind of rolls together a little bit.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That's admirable, though. Like, I love it. Like, I love that story because that's awesome. That's just you wanting to make it.
Sure. And you know what? That's what I was saying. When I finally moved in with a roommate, the appreciation that I had that I could sit on the edge of my bed and not have the guitar neck hit the wall, or that I could just walk across the hall and take a shower and not have to, you know, go outside or whatever. It was a huge thing to me. So I had a different appreciation for little things like that all of a sudden.
That's,
you know,
awesome.
Yeah.
So, okay. How in the world, if you move here and you're 19 living in a camper, like, how do you date somebody and be like, hey?
Well, you know, honestly, I wasn't even worried about that when I got here, man.
But you're still always worried about that. I know you're not worried about that, but it's still always a thing. Like, we're human beings.
Sure.
You weren't worried about that at all? Like, you'd be like, I'll just go to your place.
Dude.
my mansion's being renovated. We'll go. Like, how do you...
Man, you know, it was more about just trying to be around music. And I was so busy by trying to just stay afloat here. Like, I was taking so many gigs, whether it be with a blues band, whether it be, you know, cutting grass, whether it wasn't always music. I was just so busy trying to survive here. There was no time to do anything but goals, man. And
you move here and you start, okay, that's what do you start doing?
Man, I was so naive. I was walking up down Music Row, just knocking on doors, the whole story of,
really?
Like, yeah.
So you literally were cold calling buildings?
I wasn't even calling them. I was just showing up.
But like, it's just a cold show up. Like, yeah, man. And they answer the door. Like, publisher companies.
Yeah, some of them. I mean, a lot of them. You can't even like, you know, get to the door. They have gates or whatever that you got to buzz in or whatever.
What do you say? You knock and someone answers the door. What do you say?
Man, what did I say? I probably just, hey, I'm a songwriter. Just moved. You know, I don't even know what it was, but it was very green, and I didn't even realize it took me months of doing that to figure out, okay, this shit's not going to work. You got to come at it from a different perspective and a different angle. And it took me years of kind of going to writers' nights and finding my own community of writers that kind of helped me grind on some songs before I could get the attention of somebody who can kind of give you that green light to make it in those doors and make it in those buildings to where they can take you serious. And it took me a minute to really understand what I needed to have that stamp of approval to go on these places.
So you would go to a writer's night, let's say a restaurant, and they have 3 or 4 songwriters.
Yeah.
Probably just watching at first and saying, hey,
yep,
Forrest,
yep,
can I be your friend?
Yeah.
I mean, same thing, like a cold call to like, hey, can I hang out? Like, what's...
So, I mean, I was at the Douglas Corner. It was at the Commodore. It was at, you know, the Bluebird even, you know, when they had their open writer's nights. And you would just have a couple people that would play that, you know, would stand out more than the rest. And maybe you try to write a song with that person or make a connection there. I mean, it literally was, you know, that whole thought of started from the bottom. You're just going out trying to figure out who you want to be creative with. I have no idea where to start. So anybody and everybody that I thought, you know, kind of halfway had a cool song, I was writing with them. You know?
Did you see anybody early on? Because we are, if you moved here, I mean, you've been here how long now?
Close to 8 years.
8 years?
Yeah.
anybody early on that you saw that was really early, you're like, man, there's something there, and now we kind of know who they are? Like, anybody you saw, even as a, maybe we don't know who they are, but they're a writer now, and they've written a bunch, and you're like, man, I was watching them,
yeah,
like before they even started like cracking the egg.
Okay. A cool story is, you know, one of the first artists that I met that had a deal, we related because he was also from Louisiana. It was Dylan Scott. Whenever he moved here, you know, I met him very early on, and we, you know, we were writing together. He was the first person that I knew that had a record deal. So there was a new excitement whenever you're writing with someone with a record deal as a young writer, you know?
Because you might get a song on
sure,
a record.
Sure, you know, and so I was like, man, this is, you know, this could really be an awesome opportunity for you know, for production or whatever. I was even that early on thinking that lane, and, you know, it took some years for, you know, Dylan's been grinding it out, man, and he just celebrated that number one song, and that's been a crazy thing to kind of watch the whole thing of how that happened and see how hard he's worked, you know, just from years back. And so those are the moments that, you know, you're just like, man, I've been here a minute now, to see that, to see people move to town, get the record deal, go through the ropes of trying different songs with different producers, whatever, and then finally land on something that connects. And you know, I just couldn't be more happy for him, you know?
So you moved to town, you're pounding away, just trying to get anybody to write with you. You start writing. When does someone go, hey, you're actually pretty good, we might start paying you to write?
Sure.
How many years in?
It was about 2.5-3 years for me. And like I said, a lot of that probably could have been, you know, cut back had I been spending my time in the right places as far as meeting the right people.
Well, we never meet the right people.
Right.
Half of learning is spending time in the wrong places.
You're right. That's so true. And so whenever you're writing with these songwriters who might not necessarily be associated with a publisher, you know, it's really up to you to make sure those songs get heard, you know. So it took a co-writer of mine who passed a CD along to another writer who got it to an ASCAP rep. That's ultimately how the door opened for me. So when that ASCAP rep reached out, very excited about what I was doing, we met, and then like a week later he had meetings set up, and then all of a sudden with the same songs that I was toting around for the years prior or whatever, had a different light on them and a different kind of, you know, appreciation when I walked into the buildings, just because you have the stamp of approval from somebody reputable, you know?
When you moved here, were you, and is the goal, I should say, is it still to be an artist?
I'm not interested in being an artist. I'm more interested in creating records for other people.
Were you interested in being an artist at 18, 19, 20?
Maybe at some point, but it took me really realizing what my strength was in the writer room. And so where there have been times where I thought, well, I would like to sing this demo or whatever and like put it on a CD for my own artist project, I couldn't get near as excited about those things as when I did whenever I get in the room with somebody like Kelsey or Dylan, who can deliver that vocal a totally different way than I can. And they are the true artists, to where it doesn't take much. You just put a mic in front of them and with a great song and you capture something. I feel like for me personally, I have to work way too hard to make it sound good to consider myself an artist. But me being in the studio land of things, I know how to kind of, you know, make records sound cool, but I would much rather do that for somebody else than to try to do it for myself, in a sense where I feel like when you involve other people and have a lot of other people involved to get excited about it, it brings a whole different life to it, to where if I were just to kind of cut a record for myself, you know?
So that's where your heart is.
Yeah, man. I want to produce for anybody that, you know, connects with. When we're in the writing room, if I do a demo up and they're inspired by it, and they want me to take it on and do a full production on it, that's what excites me the most. I'm not the kind of person that'll be like, hey, let me produce your record. Like, I would rather get in the room with you, spend some time, try to figure out who that artist is as a person. And really, I do rely on a lot of their personalities to kind of dictate where I take it musically. So hopefully, whenever you hear a Kelsey Ballerini song, you know that it's a Kelsey Ballerini song before she even says a lyric, because you hear it. You hear it in the sounds, you hear it in the tempo, the way that everything is kind of delivered on those records. So if I were to work with, you know, an artist that was just completely polar opposite of that, you know, I don't want that same sonic characteristic to that album. You know, I want it to be true to that artist. So that's what I get fired up about. I would rather wake up every day knowing that I have the opportunity to create something fresh with a new artist that maybe hasn't, maybe they haven't experienced before. So that, I mean, that's what I get fired up.
Well, yeah, give me a line you wrote that you remember. Because there'll be jokes that I'm like, oh, I remember that one. I remember coming up with that line. Give me a line of Love Me Like You Mean It where you're like, nah.
I was going to give you a Peter Pan line.
I'll take one from a couple of them, but Love Me Like You Mean It first where you're like, okay. That is it. So when I hear the song, I'm like, nah, it's Forrest. That's it. That's him right there.
Oh, man.
I know it's hard because I'm trying to think, many people in a room, and who knows?
You know, this is going to sound weird, but I feel like, you know, throwing stuff out early on, trying to get the song rolling, I think it was, you know, the very first line. Hey, boy, with your hat back. Just because I feel like I was trying to pull out a really confident personality in Kelsey early on, and we were throwing out a couple of lines that just were just, you know, that felt true and authentic to what she would just say. So I remember influencing that very first line. I'll say that one.
All right, go to Peter Pan. Always on
the fly away. Okay. In the bridge of Peter Pan, I was so stoked. It was one of those moments where you get chills. Whenever, I can't even remember how it goes now, but in the bridge change where you're just a lost boy and you don't know what you lost, comma, boy. You know, I love that, those kind of lyrical plays. And whenever we landed on that in the session, I just got chills. And I was like, man, it couldn't have been better.
You gave yourself chills. That's how you know you're good.
Well, you know, I feel like as creatives, it's not like you're almost there just to accept what's going on. Like, I really can't take credit for that. It's just the right moment. It could have been inspired by what somebody else said, but it did come through me saying it. But
well, I don't think you should say anything, but yeah, I gave myself chills. Like, I had an idea where I was like, this is the greatest idea ever.
Yeah.
And it happens.
Yeah,
man. And when you get those, you're like, God, because it's so rare.
Yeah, it is. And even as a writer, there's been I could probably count on, you know, one hand the times that's happened. And you don't know what it is. You can't bottle it up. And you can't really explain it. You just know when something feels right. And I feel like that's what songwriting is about. It's all on that gut feeling of, I don't know why, it just feels right.
I have a couple jokes
in
my set that when I wrote them, I was like, oh, man, this is funny. And this is going to be funny for a long time. And then I have some, you know, but there are a couple you just know. And you're like, oh, man, this is the feeling. It's like hitting, and I haven't played golf in years. I don't know if you play golf, but I haven't played golf in years. I kind of stopped playing. But when you would hit that perfect golf shot, it was rare.
Yeah.
But it made you remember why you loved doing it. It was so rare, but you needed one occasionally.
Totally.
To remind you that I can actually do this.
You know what? I feel like that's really what a lot of songwriters deal with. Like, we're in the grind of writing songs every single day. But every now and then, you'll get that perfect swing. You know, and you just knock it out. And it's one of those things where those are the moments you live for. You could write 6 months and not be, you know, totally as excited about a song that you wrote yesterday that you just know that's why you're writing songs. And it makes the last six months of writing, you know, songs that didn't necessarily excite you as much totally worth it. Just to hold out for that one song, you know.
Yeah, is that a wedding ring?
It is.
You married?
I am.
How long have you been married?
I've been happily married for 3 years.
Look at you.
Yeah, man.
Move back into camper show?
No. We actually have a nicer place these days.
You have kids?
I don't.
So you're 28. You're married 3 years. I mean, she kind of got in at a good time.
Dude, right?
Right? I mean, like, she bought the stock.
Literally, she moved up as Love Me Like You Mean It was climbing the charts.
Was there insider trading? Like, that's so perfect. You wonder. So, man, what is she? Yeah. She in music?
She's actually a nurse at Vanderbilt.
I say this, and my girlfriend's gonna kill me, but she's in the biz too.
Yeah,
and I don't ever see her.
Oh yeah,
like it's difficult. Sure. I'm on the road all the time. I'm doing this show. I'm on the road. She's on the road all the time. You have somebody like nurses are awesome.
I know. She takes care of me, man.
Empathetic and sympathetic.
Yep.
And giving, to be able to wipe poop off somebody,
right?
And not even joking. Totally. Like, I know the word poop's funny, But to be able to do that and take care of somebody, yeah, that's a different kind of human.
You know, and she's definitely done that. She, but she's now in the operating room at Vanderbilt. Oh, so, like, I might have, yeah, I might have, like, you know, a not so good day going on, and I come home and she tells me about somebody's jaw or nose completely being on the table, and I'm like, man, okay, you know, it's not near as bad as whatever you had to face today, you know?
Wow, look at that.
So, yeah.
Look at that. How about, if you got a kiss on your lips that you're looking for, another big one for you, huh?
I produced it. I didn't write.
So that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's still your. It's still a song you're associated
Absolutely.
With.
Absolutely. Yeah. I thought we were still talking about song lyrics. I was like, I can't wait on that one.
Like,
yeah. Okay.
We go all up. We just talked about your wife. We've already moved on. Yeah, we're talking about poop.
All right.
So, you produced Dibs here.
Yeah, co-produced it.
So, I wonder about co-producing, because there's no way that I'm sitting with someone and fighting about what happened on my radio show. There's no way. I'm not just not doing it. Like, I'm going to win. Mm-hmm. I might be wrong, but I'm going to win. You're co-producing. You're both picking what ends up being the sound of the song. There got to be times where you just don't agree.
Sure. And I feel like most of finding a good co-producer is finding the contrast. So, if, you know, I'm sure we'd have more disagreements if we kind of did the same thing. But, you know, the difference and what Jason and I do is he brings a more pop element to it, and he programs drums a certain way that I can't. And I, you know, early on, you know, recognized the value that he brought to that whole thing, you know, because I can, of course, go off and produce tracks by myself. But honestly, I get more excited whenever you collab with somebody, because you can have that extra ear to run things by. And sometimes, I mean, ultimately it comes down, there's actually an unapologetically, there's a sound that we used in the intro that me and Jason were stoked about. We're like, man, that's cool. And we sent it to Kelsey. She's like, I don't know what y'all are doing with that, you know, intro, but it's got to change, you know? And so we ended up trying some new things. And so just, even though we were on board with it, you know, she kind of influenced us to try different things that now we're even more happier with it. And we feel like it's in a different spot. So I feel like as many ears that you trust involved with something, the better, you know?
On Kelsey's new record, and, you know, these podcasts live forever. So if you're hearing this now after the Kelsey's record's out, this will kind of just be nonsense. But I have Legends, which is, you know, played earlier.
Yeah.
And so you wrote and produced this?
I did.
Did you produce it by yourself?
Co-produced it.
Okay. So you wrote and co-produced this. But, like, there are only a few artists that I have music from that hasn't been, I couldn't put Unapologetically up, because it's, I mean, I guess I could have, because I have it.
Yeah.
But it's not out, I don't think, to download, is it?
It is.
Oh, that's one of the Instagram
so,
tracks?
Yeah, so, like, if you pre-order the album, you get that.
Well, I already have it. I just don't know what she puts out as, like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Could have put that up. That's on
me.
Yeah,
man.
That's on
me. It's all right, dude. Check it out. It's pretty cool.
I remember her sending me songs for this next record a year ago.
Really?
Like, working on it. There's a song. Now I'm going to get the Thomas Rhett. Because Thomas has a song called Grave. She has a song called
Graveyard.
I
do. You want me to play it for you?
I know I have it. I've had it.
You
for,
have it?
I've had it. For, I don't have the. No, I have. First of all, I have the record.
I want to play the cut, man.
But I have the work tape.
Yeah.
When she, did you write that with her?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
So she sent that to me. I'm assuming you guys wrote that just by the remembering. 9 months ago. I mean, it's been a while,
dude.
Huh?
That's been a long. Well, that's probably one of the earlier songs it was we wrote for this next album. So
yes, and she was like, "Dude, we're writing for the next record," and she sent it to me, and I was like, "Cause I had, that's cool." So you wrote that, huh?
Yeah,
I'm actually gonna play it right now, because it's such a jam.
Man, I can't wait for you to hear the fully produced version.
What what's the deal with the new record? Like, what are you on the new record?
So Legends, Unapologetically. And I don't know, I don't even have it in front of me. There's a song called Fun and Games I'm so excited about. It's not on the original 12 tracks, but I think it'll come out as like a deluxe or something.
Right.
Or some kind of thing.
How many did you produce?
I co-produced the full record with the exception of, I think, 2 songs.
So you did like 10 songs?
Yes. I mean, I don't know if that's the exact number, but
yeah,
close to that.
A bit,
yeah. Yeah, so I mean,
look at that.
In the same way, we kind of did. I mean, me and Jason did the whole first record. So, you know, it's been awesome to hear the songs that she's written over the last couple of years and bring a whole different life to them. You know, because I feel like we've dove deeper on the production. There's a lot more, I would say, even like thematic's not the right, cinematic is what I'm looking for. Elements, even
yeah,
Graveyard
that song
too.
I was like, what? Kelsey, and it's hard for me to go what I know and then what she said, because I know Kelsey privately, and there are things that I'm like, oh, did she say that to me, like in private conversation, or in like, this is stuff you can talk about. But I think she said where it's like she put the tracks in order, like to tell a story.
Right.
You're saying cinematic, like that's
yeah.
right.
Didn't yeah, you man. Even and whenever you track one, whenever you press play, it sounds like a projector is coming on. If you listen really close, and that's on Graveyard too. That's the very first track. So there's a lot of elements. There's a song called High School on there where, you know, we have clips of, you know, an actual high school, you know, football game going on, and this is sights and scenes that you would hopefully hear and see in those situations. We tried to put it, the audio in these tracks. So, and I'm specifically excited about that track because the drums in that are a full high school drum line. So it's not like your standard, you know, Nashville drummer session that comes to play on a you know, a song. It was more like if you walked into your band room, what instruments would you have access to? And that's what we put on that track. So coming at production from that standpoint of just trying to make it unique, working with an artist like her, she gets fired up about that stuff, you know, and it gives a whole different life to the record because there's really no rules.
You play instruments on these things?
Yes.
Look at this guy playing. Yeah. Instead of paying a session player, or because you feel like you know the sound better than anyone could come in?
Well, I do both. So, like, I'll hire...
Do you feel like you know what the sound needs to be? And as great as they are, because they're the best.
Yep, they are.
The session players are the best.
They are.
But do you feel like because you know it, you can play it better?
I feel like I'm going to play things more simplistic in a way that is true to me. To where I think that it influences the whole sound of the record, and you know that it's not a Nashville player. Because, I mean, I don't play the most flashiest things. It's very simple things. If you've been playing guitar for 3 or 4 months, you could probably play most of the things on her first record for sure. And that comes from, you know, I feel like that's part of the sound. It's just having, you know, if you listen to the Love Me Like You Mean It, like, ba-na-ba-na-ba-na-ba-na, it's just like everything is so ABC like that for licks. That's the way I hear them, to where, you know, there's sometimes, you know, you probably won't hear like a lot of ripping crazy solos on her records because most of the time they're just very, we try to keep it very simple and melodic. And I feel like I play things in a way that I hear Kelsey. So where a session player may play things similar to on a session they did yesterday or the day before, I try to make sure when I sit down with a Kelsey session that it does sound different and true to that song, you know?
Like, what'd you do today?
What did I do today?
Yeah, I'm always interested in
yeah. Well, I woke up. I cut some vocals today.
For a song you wrote, like demo?
Yeah, it was a demo. You know,
where'd you cut the vocals?
At my house.
Okay, now you can afford a studio. Went from a camper to now he's got his own house studio. Man.
I wish I had a studio. Yeah, it's actually in my living room. I had a studio. I'm in between finding studio spots. So right now I'm in my living room. But, you know, I wrote with Brandi Clark all last week. So we were finishing up some demos.
Isn't Brandi the best?
Dude.
Like, she's one of my favorite people.
I know.
Like,
I know.
She and her
good
and I,
as they come.
Her and I could have talked. She came up and we did this. We could talk for 3 hours.
Yep.
And I have all, and not to sidetrack, Brandi is one of my favorites.
I'm with you, man.
As a person, as a artist, as a writer,
yep.
Like all of it.
Yep.
And when her live record, she just put the live record yep. out, live in LA. And I'm just such a fan. And so you and Brandi wrote. What?
Yeah, so I used to play on the road with her for about 2.5 years.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so that was right after I finished. I was literally cutting guitars for Kelsey Ballerini's album on her bus, you know, on Brandi's bus as I was a tour musician with her for a while. And through that, I learned so much. Just being around her, being in the writing room with her, you can't help but be influenced by her awesomeness, you know?
Yeah. She's a good one. She makes you feel like a human.
Yeah, you know, I was so nervous the first time I got in a writing room with her. And, you know, she made me comfortable very quick, just the way that she responded. She really showed me how a writer of that, you know, kind of talent can really bring the best out of everybody else in the room, you know. Because, you know, where I've been in other situations where I was with a writer that I really admired and they kind of give off this intimidation thing or this, you know, whatever, that was totally not her. She, you know, I don't know, I feel like she's just a great example for, you know, just working hard and being great, you know?
Yeah, and continue. And, like, just, again, you have a great story of it, too, just working.
Yeah, man.
Just working and keep and knowing what you want to do.
Yeah.
And working toward what you want to do. And then if it pops, great. And if it doesn't, okay, cool. I'm still going to keep doing it.
That's what it's about.
Because if you love doing it, you work harder at it. And you work harder at it, eventually it's you're going to be more successful at it.
That's what it's about. And, like, you know, talking about getting paid and stuff, I didn't get paid necessarily for the demos I cranked out this morning on her. But it's like I'm more inspired to try to give those demos a different sound, you know, that gets her excited.
So are they for her songs?
Like, yeah, their songs. Well, hopefully, you know, we've.
Right, but they're for her.
They are for her.
It's not things you guys wrote together that's being thrown out in the universe. Like, hopefully, they're for her.
Man, that's the hope. I'm hoping she will be able to at least record a few of them.
Yeah.
But that being said, we never know. We just try to write the best song possible. And if she decides that it's not for her, hopefully, it does get pitched and placed somewhere else. But, you know, I mean, I cranked out 2 this morning.
You a good singer?
Am I a good singer? I sing backgrounds better than I do leads. So
like you do harmonies?
Yeah. Yeah. So back to the artist thing, a lot, I used to be very self-conscious about my voice because, you know, I don't have the most deep, manly tone, whatever, that a lot of country people relate to, and a lot of pitches do well. So a lot of my sessions early on, I would kind of, you know, get offended or whatever when people say, yeah, you just need another vocal and something that sounds a little more grit or whatever. But I learned that my talent was harmonizing with other singers. So I would rather put somebody else as a lead and knock out some harmonies on top of them that sounds, you know, really aligned with what they're doing. And I spend more of my vocal time trying to accent what they do. And, you know, that works for me because I do have a thinner voice and it kind of blends better with other lead vocals.
I think you have a fantastic voice. Stop
Thanks.
Listening to people.
Thanks,
I
man.
Think it's an amazing voice. I got them listening to it. It's the best. I mean, I saw you because
you didn't
hear
me sing yet, though.
I heard you were singing with Kelsey and Hillary Lindsay.
Harmonies.
You were doing harmonies.
Harmonies, yeah.
I haven't heard you sing. Yeah. Do I have any of him singing?
No.
No?
Yeah.
Because you hide it. I was all been blocked from the internet.
Oh, you know what? I'll sing for you.
I'd rather not. I'd rather just imagine in my head this beautiful, thin voice that you talk about. I'm reading another one of these memes. Let's see what's funny here. When you were the best singer in your hometown, you got to Nashville and find out everybody else was too. That's the thing.
That's so true, man.
Everybody comes here and they were their hometown heroes.
Yeah.
And they were the big music guy at home. And you come to the town where everybody else was the big. It's like the NFL.
Yep.
Like, you were the best high school player. You were one of the best players in your conference. But now you're in the NFL where you're playing with all the other best players in their conference.
Yep.
And everywhere you look, everybody's good.
Yep. And there's always somebody new just getting off the bus, ready to just come and crush it, you know?
When a new rider in town asks if you have any advice, and it shows a guy praying. So say someone comes up to you, 22-year-old, and say, hey, Forrest, what do I do? How do I start?
Yeah. I would say, man, I would find people that you believe get you as far as, you know, understands what you want to say in your songs, and try to find people that will chase after that rather than chase after what they feel like is popular or what they feel like will be successful. What I love about working and producing artists is trying to, you know, infuse their language and the way they talk into their songs and into, you know, just their whole, you know, I don't know, just the way that they deliver a lyric, trying to capture their personality in that. And I feel like to be true to your songs and to have something that's different, you got to tap into that. You have to really find the way that you would say things, the perspective you have, because that's what's going to help you stand out, you know, instead of trying to sound like, you know, someone more successful or whatever, you know.
Man, look at you. Kids do the darndest things. Look at this guy over here. Well, good luck on the next Kelsey record.
Thanks, man.
You know, I know that you got a lot of other stuff kind of popping around, too. Yeah, big things, man.
Yeah, dude, I'm excited.
Big things. I'm anxious, to hear what you got in your pocket.
Yeah, dude.
Because it's just like, I can tell that you, like, it's your path. A lot of writers come in and they came to town to be artists.
Yeah.
And they found out they were also a good writer. And the artist thing didn't work out. So they were like, I'm going to move all my chips over and I'm going to be a writer.
Right.
But I just feel like you'd love like the creation.
I do. I love it all, man. I used to be so conflicted growing up. I would play, you know, in different bands, and one week I would be covering an Eminem song. The next week I'd be playing a Christian song. Then I'd be playing hardcore. And I thought that like, I was so scatterbrained at the time, but that's been the most biggest asset for me now as a producer, because, I mean, I've had a love for all kinds of music. And even if, you know, for me to decide to be an artist, I couldn't even decide what I wanted to do, because I just love it all.
Probably a rapper.
See, you joke, but, man, dude, I can rap the hell out of a song in my truck, you know? I really can.
But everybody can rap along with something.
No, man. I mean,
everybody
you can kill
rap
that track.
Along with something.
My flow's steady, man.
Everybody can rap along with something. I had a hip-hop record deal for one song as Captain Caucasian. I'm gonna bring him back. You think I'm playing? Don't worry. I'm going to bring him back. You worry about getting sued?
No, I don't.
With your music, you don't worry about your... Because it's all... There are only so many avenues to go down.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never had a reason to think about that, so I just try not
but
to.
But all adding on the... for example, I'll give you an example. The Taylor song that just came out. They had to add Right Said Fred to the song.
Right.
Because it was... To me, it sounded more like My Humps than it did I'm Too Sexy.
Yeah.
But whatever. They had to add them on instead of get sued.
Yep.
And you see that Tom Schrett had to add a bunch of writers onto some songs. Because, again, and I read articles about comedy. And what I try to do is not watch any. As I'm on tour now. I have a couple more dates on my stand-up tour. I try not to watch any comedy at all, because it's not that I'm going to purposely steal anything. Subconsciously, I may think, well, that's funny.
Mm-hmm.
And come back to, I don't remember why I was thinking about this. This is a funny idea. And then create something, not realizing I've created it because I heard. So I try, and as I'm writing this second book, I don't read anything because I don't want to accidentally take anything.
Yep, that's real, man. That's so true. And as like my daily listen, like if you hopped in my truck right now, it probably would be on like, you know, some gangster rap or something. And I use it to cleanse my palate in that same thought, where I don't try to listen to commercial country or, you know, things that I feel like are close to the market that I'm chasing. I try to listen to things that are the complete contrast, because in the same way, you know, it's going to inspire you in some roundabout way. So I try to pull most of my inspiration from other genres.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of the stuff that happens on purpose.
Right.
I really don't.
Right.
I don't think someone sits down and goes. But there are times, and again, I have the benefit of being friends with some really big writers. Friends, buddies. I don't have any friends. I have like two friends in my life. One of my dog. And so... But I think sometimes you're like, hey, you know, we should go for this vibe.
Yeah.
Let Eric Clapton, Wonderful Tonight. I love that vibe. Why don't we chase that?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you're kind of doing it.
Yeah.
And you wanted to go that direction. You accidentally kind of slipped into that spot. And you don't do it on purpose.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of times I will pull up a track that, you know, we're inspired by or you know, maybe it's a popular track at the time that people are loving, and maybe it's just simply taking the drum beat from it and then putting different chords over it. And then it pulls you away from it, where you never really would know how you got there. It's just, you know, sometimes I will try to mirror a different pattern of a song that I love, but hopefully incorporate other elements to it that pull it away from it far enough to where...
If I were you, I'd just listen to Mozart and hip-hop. That's it. Stay out of those.
Dude.
Stay out of those lawsuits, man. Everybody
getting
sued. Everybody getting sued now. Or everybody's having to add on writers. More of that now. I think more it's the... Instead of suing, just make me a co-writer.
Sure.
And...
No, haven't had to deal with it yet.
Good
but,
for you.
I mean, I guess if I mean
law of averages, it's coming.
Yeah, well, I'll
when
say,
you start writing a bunch of hits,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I guess it's not necessarily a bad thing, because if people want to be on it, obviously you're pulling some dough, you know.
Obviously, they're hearing it, and someone's like, "This song's making some money."
Yeah,
you should probably listen to this and see if.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh man, I've enjoyed this time.
Yeah, me too.
Look at you. Well, best of luck to you. I hope the Kelsey album does great. I'm kind of anxious to see what else you got in your pocket. So let us know. Give us a call up here on the hotline.
Absolutely.
We don't have a hotline, do we?
No.
No, we don't even have an extra microphone. Like, we've had people, like, we have artists come in, and, like, even groups. We can't get a group in. We can't bring in all Little Big Town because we have one mic. So Karen came in. We don't have two mics, so only Preston from Low Cash came in.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, this place is totally.
Man, dude, I can donate some mics if you need some mics.
We only have six channels, and I don't, like...
I 3 words.
Only 3 words. Like, this thing gets millions of listens, right? Like, this this podcast has turned into 20 people listening to it to, oddly, millions of listens.
It's time to upgrade.
But that's not how we roll.
Okay.
And not on purpose. When I built this studio, I do finger quotes. They didn't even know we were putting this up. Mike D and I were just like, we'll set up some computers.
Yeah.
This is old equipment from our old, when I lived in Texas.
Hey,
we made this, and then we just started doing it. And eventually we're going to have to
It works.
Get somebody to pay.
It works.
It works.
Yeah.
Barely. Sometimes I'll have multiple channels playing things, and I'm like, why is iTunes playing in my, or I'll try to play something off this, like let's say Legends. Yeah, and instead of it playing through here, it'll be playing through my Alexa in my bedroom, and I'll be able to hear it through my headphones. I'm like, wait, this isn't right. Yeah, dude, this is how we roll. It's how we roll. Well, good luck, man.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, good luck. Congratulations. And
thanks.
Tell your wife I said hello.
Absolutely will.
And that what she does is that it's much more admirable than you.
I agree.
You haven't tweeted anything since April of 16. Man. You just don't? Because I wanted to see what you were like talking about. You done?
Instagram is what I love. So... Tree Man's Creative Life is the Instagram handle.
What? Tree Man's?
Tree Man's Creative Life is the Instagram handle. When I was growing up, you know, a friend of mine, you know, just coined the nickname Tree Man or whatever, and it's just kind of hung around, and I think I want to keep it for a while.
And that's your Instagram name?
That's my Instagram name,
I'm gonna have to check that out, because wanted to see what your thoughts were on the world in 140 characters or less.
There's definitely a lot of thoughts on Instagram.
Good one. And thanks to Sleep Number.
Yep.
And thanks to Forrest Whitehead. You don't spell your name with an E. So people, do they ever call you Forrest Whitehead?
Not yet. I get more Forrest Whitaker.
You look like him.
Oh, thank you.
Except exactly the opposite.
Yeah.
Like, so the haircut.
Yeah.
So you kept it simple since about third grade, or what? Same haircut? Like, well, dork to dork. Like, we're just talking dork to dork here.
Oh, no, absolutely. It's funny you say that. Tomorrow morning, I'm shaving my head.
Friend, what do you mean shaving? There's a lot of different shaving your heads.
Like, I mean, I'm buzzing it off, man. Like, because I don't know what, I never have known what to do with my hair, you know, so I kept it in a cap a lot of time, but I've decided tomorrow, I'm just going to shave it off. Yeah, it's happening.
That means there's a cleansing. When someone just goes full shave, that means they're just trying to... Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Good luck, buddy.
Man, new beginnings.
Forrest Whitehead. Yes. All right. Or Tree Man looks at pictures. Wait, what
Tree Man's Creative Life.
Tree Man's Creative Life.
That's it.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time on the Bobby Cassie.